Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here's another nice mess you've gotten me into.
Okay. Welcome to Left Ahead. We have a couple of weird weeks here. This is obviously an odd day and time. And we have this is a lead into a follow-up show on Monday, May 2nd at 3 p.m. with the Attorney General of Massachusetts, Maura Healey. And it's the same topic, but she wants a short one, so we'll give a little introduction. And I'll give a little personal vignette to talk about the bad old days, which may not be old or gone yet. So anyway, it's about opioids, and it's a huge thing. It's a big crisis here, and Massachusetts got around to passing the laws recently to update them, and what's going on and why, and what's the role of doctors in all of this. So I'm going to get on to it. We have roughly four people a day die in Massachusetts from opioid-related overdoses and withdrawals, and it's such a big deal. So you think about this is not something that you make in the bathtub or the kitchen. It's not a meth lab. It's making the synthetic opium, morphine, and related drugs is done in pharmacies, pharmaceutical companies. So the way you get them is through a prescription. And you got to ask what's going on with all of that. How did this happen? And who hands out these? And what's the deal? So I will note, I'll go right into my own story. And then, alas, it's not a great woe is me confessional. And I have never been an opiate addict, but I did have my own run-in with it. And maybe because I was not hospital surgically inclined, I had my tonsils, I had my appendix. To me, an operation is a root canal. So when I needed an operation, it turned out to be a big deal, extremely painful one, and there's a lot of morphine involved. So I ran into the system and wasn't quite prepared for it. It was a black ice day, the worst black ice day there's ever been in Massachusetts. It was 7 years ago, the bad old days. I had friends who works in hospitals and nurses, and say, like, they got to their hospitals and saw all the ambulances lined up, and they said, maybe I ought to take the day off. But it was so bad, people were falling all over the place, literally, and they were breaking on all kinds of bones. And I did, too. And I fell very badly on black ice and just destroyed the lower left leg, the bigger bone, the tibia, had a grass fracture. So it ran, the length of it was just split like if you'd taken a piece of wood and balsa wood maybe and twisted it. And it just split all the way up. And then the small bone, the fibula, was comminuted, they call it, down at the base, the lower head where it goes into the ankle. And the bones broke up into little teeny rocks, and they're held together with the fascia, that membrane that goes all around the bone. There wasn't a bone at the lower part of it. It just disappeared. To this day, I don't know whether it ever regrew the bone. But the orthopedic types say that you don't really need a little bone, the fibula. I remain to be convinced, I have friends who are physical therapists and massage therapists, and they say, you really do need it for balance and to keep yourself aligned and keep from getting terrible pains. And anyway, but what I have said, this, it was gone. I looked down, and my foot and ankle were turned at right angles to the leg. They were just gone. So it was a big deal. It was a big operation. And they put in they went in through the knee, took off the patella, hollowed out the tibia, and put in what they call an expert nail. It's a titanium rod that ran from the knee to the ankle inside the bone. So the inside of the bone was gone forever and ever. And they held it in there with still holes in there with six pins, they call them, screws. But it was a long operation, and it was extremely painful when it happened, extremely painful after the operation, and they had me on morphine drip. So there I was, all of a sudden I become acquainted with morphine. And they came around regularly after the operation with more and more morphine. And not only morphine, they came around with prescription antacids, laxatives, all kinds of stuff. And they kept saying, this is for you. And it really wasn't. It was for them. They didn't want to deal with giving anybody an enema. They didn't want me piping up and saying I had problems, so they wanted to keep me drugged up. And they wanted to keep everything cool. And, you know, I didn't take the things. I didn't take any antacids. I didn't feel any problem, and I didn't need any while I was there afterwards. So that was that. And I, even in my drug state with the morphine drip, when they began switching me to the tablets, I didn't take them. I ended up with about a third to a quarter of what they came around with. And I said, I will take, you know, this much. And they had fits, and the nurses and doctors all said the same thing. Stay ahead of the pain, keep ahead of the pain. And they just wanted me to stay drugged up. And I could never thinking about it. I was really terrified of the idea. Okay, these people are pushing drugs on me. And I know it was a thing, and I know a bunch of nurses and several doctors, and that was the attitude then, and in many places, it still is the attitude. You have to keep ahead of the pain. It ends up people taking large amounts of that. So anyway, when it came time to leave the hospital, I was in still a terrific amount of pain, but I would rather have moderate pain to high pain than deal with the idea of a drug addiction. I don't know where I got that. It was just, I bought into it. I was just saying no. Just say no. And when they left, they gave me a large vial of synthetic morphine then, hydromorphone. And it was enough for a month, and there were three or four refills, I think it was four, on the script. And that was taking six of these a day. And I ended up, for the first several days, taking like three or four because it was fairly painful. And visiting nurses came around, and what did they say? Keep ahead of the pain. Stay ahead of the pain. They wanted me to take more and more and more of this stuff. And I'm saying, I said, you know, I'm lying here. It hurts, but yeah, I'm not going anyplace. I'm not doing anything. You know, it's not going to make it all that better. So I did that. And meanwhile, I had to shoot myself up with anticoagulant, which I didn't care for. I was not much for needles anyway. I've never, that was the first time I ever injected myself with any sort of drug. I never did recreational needles. And I only did this because the fear of God in there, they put in there. And my grandfather died, basically a blood clot after surgery. So, okay, I'll do something about this. I'll take that. So I shot myself up for several weeks, a couple times a day. And then the hydromorphone, I took, you know, less and less of it, and I never filled it. I consumed maybe one half of that one bottle they gave me and never filled any of the others. And I found it was a program where one of the drug stores was taking back prescription medicines that you weren't using. So I got rid of the rest of the stuff I had in there. And I was just, I don't know, maybe I was too strong on it. But I'm looking at that and thinking, this is what people are talking about, you know, they left the hospital with a whole bunch of drugs and they got in the habit. Every time anything hurt, they just took it and they took more of it. And they got to the point they'd go back, basically they'd beg the doctor for more drugs, and they'd get it. And 7 years ago, that was very common. That's what was done. I've subsequently heard from some nurses and a doctor that times have changed, and is the new drug law, here in Massachusetts. So that's going to enforce some change, and people are actively discouraging doctors from prescribing, or should I say over-prescribing. There are other people other than MDs who can prescribe drugs, veterinarians and dentists, for example. I think in some places nurse practitioners can if there's a supervising doctor somewhere in the chain of command. But anyway, it's almost entirely MDs. And I was looking down the list as maybe it shouldn't be so surprising, but they that includes number two or three on the list is orthopedic types. So yeah, and I had a lot of pain, but you know, I think the orthopedic types, in my cynical view, like getting office visits. It meets their corporate requirements, and they make money at it, and I think that's what it's about. So, what does the new Massachusetts law look like? And in theory, at least, you only get a prescription for 7 days of an opioids, and then you have to get it renewed. I'm sure that can be done by phone, but nevertheless, but you have to go through the effort to do that. And the only exception that I'm aware of is for people who have chronic pain conditions, and the physicians agree they can need stuff every day forever and ever and ever. So that's in there. And there's a lot of intervention stuff in the law, so that if you end up in an ER with an opiate overdose, then you have to go to see a mental health professional as well as a physician before you get released. And they want you in plans to modulate your use and record everything. And then everything else is recorded, and there's a database. So the idea seems to be that they would identify over-prescribing physicians, which I think is probably a good thing. And I'll ask Healy about that, because I think we all know that doctors tend to be overly respected, worshipped even, particularly if they're surgeons, and they get a pass on things. And they are one of what I, again, in my cynicism, I'm going to say I have never been much for the self-regulation, self-policing types, including police. Police policing themselves doesn't work. We really need civilian review boards that have some power to stop police abuse. But the same thing is true of accountants and physicians and financial professionals. Whatever they're in a position where their professional management and associations do the policing, judge them and or, quote, punish them, whether it's the State Bar Association for Attorneys or whatever it is, it tends not to work. Their professionals, their peers, are extremely lax in doing anything about it. And I think that's what's been going on now for, I guess ever since there's been drug prescriptions. I mean, used to, it was different when you could just go to your drugstore and say, hey, I'd like some, you know, cocaine or opium or any of this other stuff that was legal way back then. But when they started having prescriptions and people began abusing those, and the physicians began abusing that. And I, you know, I have no figures on what percentage of those are doctors who are just making more money by churning out their patients and running them through. I remember I was surprised in my naivete in a little teeny town in West Virginia where I spent my summers and holidays, and there was a local physician there when my sister and I got her got our camp physicals and school physicals from him, and my mother had. And he'd been there a long old time, and I was always surprised to see farmers I knew in his office a lot. I'd go by there no matter what it was, or pick up something or get my physical, whatever. But I'd see these guys I knew in there who were perfectly healthy, and yet I see them again and again and again. And I eventually, my mother told me, it's because he was prescribing or just shooting him up with drugs. He went in there to get their high. And apparently that was not, and maybe in some places still is not, unusual. So there are physicians who are bad actors, others who are simply greedy. But I'm going to have to get down with the Attorney General and I'll say, is this new law going to result in physicians who overprescribe getting punished, losing their licenses, maybe going to jail? And I have no idea what she's going to say on that. That's one of my big things. I have a friend who does the dickering, the negotiation for with doctors and doctors' groups and hospitals on payments from insurance. And from time to time, he has to tell the prescribing doctor or medical group, you're putting out a lot of opioid prescriptions here, much higher than the average for a group your size, and I think you need to tune that down. So I don't know how many people are like him and being active in this kind of thing, but I think this new law is going to promote more of that, and people are going to get more into it and drawing attention to what's possible, what's permissible. So I am going to be really intrigued to see how because we have, Charlie Baker as our governor, who's an insurance, he's certainly not a medical professional, but he played one in the boardroom. He was ran a health plans. So he's anti-drug abuse, and our mayor in Boston, Marty Walsh, makes it very plain that he is a recovering drug and alcohol addict, and he does not suit that. He thinks it's fine for restaurants to have alcohol licenses, and he pushes those, but he himself apparently hasn't had a drink in, 20 years or something. He did most of his abuse in his teens and early 20s and has been straight, and he doesn't do that stuff. So we have some anti-drug people here, anti-drug abuse people here, and we'll just see how it works. But, I'm looking at it, and from my own experience, I'm also going to ask Healy, has it really changed all that much in 7 years? Are these nurses right when they tell me that things are totally different? And does this calling up for a prescription once a week, is that going to stop this? Are these people going to get classified as chronic pain patients who need something and get much more? And is there going to be punishment for bad actor doctors? So I think I'll have to wait to see what Maura Healey says. She may have a great deal of faith in this the new law. She is, in fact, she's been a prosecutor, and she's big on fighting crime. So is doctor crime worth fighting? Is that the fight to pick? Is that the area that's going to make the difference? Because certainly, people talk about, it's this doctor shopping. These patients go out, they just go from collect, scripts from, lots and lots and lots of doctors. And I got my doubts. I think it's much more likely that they got one doctor who gives them what they want. That's the way it goes. And it's going to keep on that way. So it should be a lot easier then, if that's the way it is, than to narrow down on the doctors who are over-prescribing and shut them down or throttle them. So I'll begin to see, is there a law enforcement solution to this? Because we've got a lot of people dying of opiates one way or another. So I'll get into it and see what the expert says, because, you know, my pathetic little experiential knowledge is not much. So we'll see how it goes on that. Meanwhile, do tune or turn in. So it's going to be a little over a week. So Monday, May 2nd, at 3 p.m., it's going to be Mara Healy on here, and I'll put it out on Twitter and on Left Ahead. And, of course, it's already on Blog Talk Radio, so you can see it. But I think, and if you can't listen to it live, do come back to Left Ahead or here to Blog Talk Radio or our iTunes page and listen to what Attorney General Mara Healy tells me is truth and knowledge about the state and future of opiates in Massachusetts. So thank you very much, and I will probably, I might do something next week, but otherwise, Monday, May 2nd, 3 p.m., at the same Bat Channel. Thank you, and goodbye.